Greetings, friends. It's me, Duncan, and this is the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast. Welcome. We've got a great episode for you today. Before we jump into it, might I invite you to join my Patreon? It's at patreon.com/DTFH. Also, I've got some dates coming up. I'm going to be performing in Austin the week of January 8th at Vulcan Gas Company. You can find tickets at the Vulcan Gas Company website. Links will be at DuncanTrussell.com. And I'm going to be at Zany's in Nashville, and that's the week after Valentine's Day. So you can go to the Zany's website or just go to my website. Regardless, I hope you will come. Now, everybody, today's guest is so inspiring and so funny. If you aren't already aware of her, I'm so excited that I get to introduce you to her. She's got a wonderful new comedy special on HBO Max. It's called Fighting Words. I hope you'll watch it. But first, I hope you'll listen to this conversation. Everybody, welcome. For the first time, hopefully not the last, to the DTFH, Ida Rodriguez. Ida, welcome to the DTFH. It's so cool to meet you.
Oh, nice to meet you too. Thank you for having me.
You know, I gotta say, you know, my favorite comics, George Carlin, Richard Pryor. What I love about them is they're alchemists. You know this, but they transform. They're so good at turning some of their life experiences into something funny that somehow you can forget when you're watching them.
Yeah.
That they're, you know, they've been through something so brutal. They're almost too good at it. Almost too good at it. You know what I mean? Because you're laughing at Pryor talking about getting his skin shaved off or whatever when he was burnt. Carlin talking about his wife screaming with cancer. I'm watching you and I'm thinking, my God, I would be curled up in a ball somewhere if I went through some of the stuff you went through. And so my first question to you is, I can see that this is a kind of beautiful, powerful therapy that you're doing and successfully, because I don't like it when comics are doing the therapy part, but it's not funny. You know what I mean? Yeah. Though I don't mind. But you're making it brilliantly funny. But I got to ask you, off stage, how are you working through this stuff?
So I thank you. First of all, Carlin and Pryor are my heroes. Those are the best comedians that ever lived, hands down, in my opinion.
Yes.
And those are the people that inspire me all the time. Honestly, the way that I deal with a lot of this stuff came to me later is I'm in therapy. Mm. You know, I meditate. I read this book by Louise Hay about healing, and I sat down and I started doing some of the exercises, which was really weird. I did this. It's right here. It's called You Can Heal Your Life.
Okay.
But it's like a book that I really work. But there's an exercise in that book that you go back to little you. And I had never done that before. Mm. I think I was afraid to do that. And I went back and I visited with little me. And I thought that it was bogus. I was like, this is some, you know, whatever, trash. And I cried like a baby, just forgiving myself for thinking that a lot of the things that happened to me when I was a kid was my own fault. Mm. And just giving myself grace, but also letting that little girl know that she was going to come out on the other side and be okay. Yeah. And I don't know what happened that day, but I think that has been something that's been very instrumental in my healing. And I practice forgiveness daily. Some people tell me I'm a sucker, like I'm a you know, like I'm kind of weak for that, but I think it makes me stronger. Not to walk around holding anger for what other people should be accountable for. And it just, forgiveness has been really, really empowering for me.
How do you do it? How do you forgive?
Oh, it's practice. Like I sit down and I write about it. I write it in a journal. I say it into the mirror. I say it out loud so that my subconscious can pick it up. It's a process. It's not like me saying, hey, I forgive you and it's over. But right. It really has been. My ex-husband, the father of my children, who didn't take care of his kids for a great amount of time and then blamed me for my geographic setting as the reason for why he didn't do what he was supposed to do, which that would make me so angry at the time. And
yeah,
just forgiving him just gave me freedom and realizing and acceptance. Like acceptance is always a big thing for me because that's where it gets tricky for us. Because when we don't accept things, we continuously try to adjust them, try to fix them, right? And I was like, he's not going to show up and I have to accept that. This is my journey. My journey is as a single mom, I'm going to have to do this task. And he's not going to pay child support and he's not going to show up and you have to accept that. And it took me years to accept that because I was just like, but why? Like, how could you just travel? When I finally said, this is my journey. This is what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to show up. My life got so much easier.
Wow. I've been thinking about forgiveness a lot. And, you know, it's something everyone says, forgive, forgive, forgive. And I think a lot of people think they've forgiven just because they've sort of casually thought, well, I don't care about that person anymore. Yeah. But I can't, some people, I can't let go. I mean, not like I'm like stalking them, not like I'm sending them like dove heads in the mail or anything like that, but just like, it's like they're stuck in my mind a little bit. They float around in there and then appear sometimes at like 2 a.m. where I'm thinking, what a motherfucker. And
I
this,
feel you.
But so for
well,
you.
You're not off the hook when you're forgiven. So that's the thing that I had to learn, because forgiveness is for you, right? So I forgive you. That does not mean in any way that I will continue a relationship with you, that I will engage you, that I will, I'm not here to alleviate your guilt. That is all for me. And so that was what I had to learn, because I always thought, I was a victim of sexual abuse when I was a child. So when people would talk about forgiveness, because I grew up in this like super religious, complicated religious setting that was weird because it was all drugs going, all kinds of stuff. But they would always tell us.
Sorry, what was the religion?
So my family was, they traveled from being Pentecostal and landed at being Seventh-day Adventist.
Wow.
So, you know, that you're always being told to forgive. If God can forgive you, you can forgive. But that sends mixed messages to a kid when somebody's doing something bad to them because they're obligated to forgive them.
Oh, God, what a mess. Yeah, right.
It is. Ugh. So for me, it was like I had to learn that forgiveness, the version of forgiveness that I've accepted is me forgiving you has nothing to do with you. It's only mine. And it's just for me to free myself. And forgiveness, it has so much to do with me accepting that the things that happened to me were not my fault. Forgiving right. myself and then letting that person go. But I will never, ever look at their face again. I don't engage people who I believe mean me no well. I don't care if we share name, blood. I don't want to be around those people.
Right. Do you think you can forgive someone and simultaneously still be angry at them?
Absolutely.
Maybe that's where I misunderstood it. Maybe because my version of forgiveness is I don't have any hard feelings for the person anymore.
Forgiveness is, I mean, for me, I believe it has so much to do with yourself. Because a lot of the times when we hold on to stuff, we're angry that we let that happen to us. That we didn't catch it, that we didn't figure it out. And for me, it's like, you know what? The universe will handle you. And it always does. You know, it's not my job.
Right. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord.
That's right.
Now, but tell me a little bit about, you mean like Christian Pentecostal, like snake handling?
Well, I mean, I never saw that, but yes, that type of Christian. It was a Holy Ghost, you know.
Speaking in tongues.
Speaking in tongues. A lot of stuff happening that was very complicated and difficult for me to understand. You know, people would speak in tongues. That scared me as a kid. I was a child. I didn't understand it. Then I thought something was wrong with me because it didn't happen to me. And so I didn't know that, you know, in some cases that is just mass hysteria. And I was just like, maybe God doesn't love me because I don't do it.
Oh, wow. It's so sad that, you know, you have this, the story of the Pentecost is so intense and beautiful. The fire, the tongues of fire on their head, and they could speak all the languages of the world. I mean, symbolically, metaphorically, oh my God, it's like the most beautiful thing. But then in practice, you hear these stories like what you're saying, you know, of abuse, of children who are completely scrambled by the pressure parents are putting on them to sort of give up their rational mind. And it's really can warp people in the most intense way. Are you still religious? Do you still pray or go to church?
I still pray. I don't go to church right now. I don't have a church home. I still pray. I believe in the Most High. I do believe in the Most High, and that, and I arrived at another place where I was like, I'm not going to let other people, because we say, the Bible says that God made man in his image, but man has made God in his image. And so we sit down and talk to people who are always speaking on behalf of God. And my mom is one of them. Oh, God is going to punish you. God don't like ugly. You hear it all the time. And I'm like, how you know? You a mere man, imperfect. How you gonna tell me that the infinite intelligence, the Most High of us all, is that petty, that is worrying about, you know, you being snarky? Like that for me is just incomprehensible. And it doesn't connect with what is in my heart and soul or in my mind. And I do believe that praising and believing in God, the Most High, infinite intelligence, whatever it is for you, Jeshua, it is an intellectual process. And to say that it's not is insulting to what the Most High is. And that's why where we split, because people will say, oh, it's here. And I'm like, no, it's here too, because what I'm able to do and I have domain on this planet over all the other creatures means that there's some form of intelligence that went into that. So why would I forsake that in my decision-making process? I think that's ungodlike. And so,
I want to thank Liquid IV for supporting this episode of the DTFH. Liquid IV was my savior when I was in Austin in a hotel room with COVID. I was drinking it every single day. It gets you hydrated. One stick of Liquid IV in 16 ounces of water hydrates faster and more efficiently than water alone. Also, it tastes really good. It's delicious. In fact, it tastes so good, you might think, this can't be good for me. It's too wonderful, but it is. It gets you hydrated. You're all dehydrated. You're like a slug that somebody put salt on top of. You gotta bring yourself back to life with some Liquid IV. It makes you feel good. Plus, they've donated over 11 million sticks of this glory powder to people around the world. I drank the strawberry Liquid IV when I had COVID, but they're all delicious. Grab your favorite Liquid IV flavors nationwide at Walmart, or you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code Duncan at checkout. That's 25% off anything you order when you get better hydration today using promo code Duncan at liquidiv.com. That's promo code Duncan. Try them out. Get hydrated, you withered slug. Thank you. That's beautiful. Yeah, that to me is the creepiest thing when people are inviting you to abandon your intellect. And usually the way they do it is very flowery. Just yes. listen to your heart, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, you're wrong. Your instincts and all the intuition's telling you that you're getting inducted into a cult. That's that's just your mind. Listen to your heart. Yeah, that's how people get. I love that. In Buddhism, you know, there's the idea is there's no faith here. It's a process. It's a system, and so it doesn't matter if you understand it. You have to practice it. You have to pick it. They call it picking it up. You have to take it up. Mm-hmm. And so I think sometimes people get lazy and they imagine, oh, okay, I have some sort of vague belief in something bigger than me. That's enough. I love that you're saying you use your intellect, but what does that look like? You mean like when you're approaching some scripture or something, don't be afraid to deconstruct it or pull
yeah,
it
I'm
apart?
Not afraid to deconstruct it. I don't, and I also read all the books, all these doctrine books. Like I don't just read the Bible. I've read the Quran. I've read the Torah. Like I've read all of the books because if you read, you know, like the Kabbalion, like if you read all of those books, you'll find the common theme and it's like the universal laws, right? Like, cause if you look, they're universal laws, like they're, even when you think about money, money is an energy, right? Because it's a piece of paper and we've assigned the value to it, right? So it's energy, right? That we have given power to, right? We choose what we give power to when we sit around and think about a lot of these things. For me, it's like, what is the common thread in all of this? And the common thread is you obey the universal laws, right? Whether you're tithing to a church or you take money from all the money that you make and you make sure that some people eat or that some people have a sweater or socks. Or that you take time because it keeps you balanced as a human being. So maybe I'm not tithing to these big churches where the pastors are driving Bentleys, but I do make sure that I invest in helping people who don't have what I have because I feel like that is following the universal laws, right? And whether in the Bible it's tithing and, you know, and alms to the poor in Quran, it all means the same thing. It's like, it keeps you balanced and human to take from all that you have and be able to help somebody else. And that doesn't do anything but make you feel better as a human being. And it completes, you know, the cycle of humanity for me. So I read all those books and I take from all of them because I think that they've all been polluted and they've been, you know, tainted by the hunger for power and money, right. The greed for power and money. So if you remove all of that, you'll see that the common thing is to obey universal laws. It's not cool to, you know, to murder people because you want to control and you want power. Like all of that stuff is just common sense. And we don't need anybody to tell us what's right or wrong.
Right.
We have the center. The people who don't have that, there's something, they have issues, right? They have, there's some balances, some chemical imbalances. You know, nobody, you don't need a man in a suit to tell you as you hand him over your paycheck that you can't, you know, what's right or wrong. It's just, to me, it's just like, we all have it and you have to stay connected to that if you want to have a fulfilled life.
Have you ever heard the Mark Twain quote, religion is what happened when the first con artist met the first fool?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And it's a brilliant trick because it's so deceptive in the sense what you're saying, anyone I know who is successful, they leave massive tips and they're so generous and they're always giving and giving and giving. And you realize that's not just, they are generous, but it's not all coming from some benevolence. It's coming from understanding these laws that you're talking about and working with them, utilizing them, knowing you've got to be in the flow. You know, you have to be in the flow. But it's such an insane thing to think that there are organized groups of people who understand that law too, and are deceiving people into, like, have literally shifted that flow into their organizations. You know, and a lot of times those organizations are taking 70, 80% of the donations and just using them to pay their staff.
To live well. You know what's funny? Like, those people are the people that scare me the most, because those are the people that I believe don't believe in it, right? They figured out. Did you see Leap of Faith? Like, it's a hustle, right? Because the Bible, if you are really going to go by the Bible says, better you not be born than to mislead my sheep.
Yeah.
Like that, the consequences are more for those people who have assumed the positions of power within the church. So if you honestly believe that, and you know you hustling the people, and you know the consequences are worse for you, you can't possibly believe it.
Right.
And that's why for me, I always look at people sideways, because, you know, I never gave money to church because I felt like I was getting hustled. That was my way of praise and worship, right? I tithe, or I give my offerings as praise, just like I sing. And whatever that person does with it, that's on you, right? Because I really believe that I believe in karma as well. So, you know, I just think that it's important to deconstruct it and find your own way in it, because if you allow people to sway you, you'll be a victim. You will be a victim because everybody's not whole and pure. And a lot of these people who I think start, I was a member of a church that was really small and very humble. And then I watched it evolve into like this mega church, because it became a business. And you could see the difference where the first lady of the church had a security guard and would not even allow members of the church to get used close to her.
Whoa.
And I stopped going to the church. It was so it was so gross to see. It was a young man who was mentally ill, and he was trying to talk to her, and she told the security guard to get him away from her. And I was just grossed out. And I was like, I can't be a part of that. And I just remember how humble and meek they were when they didn't have. And that was the love that they had is what attracted people to the church. And people wanted to be a part of that because it felt so authentic. And as it grew, it just got gross. And I was like, I can't be a part of this.
Oh,
I
stopped going to church. You don't want to say the name of the church, do you?
No, I don't want to say the name of the church because I don't. But it's in Los Angeles. It's in Los Angeles.
Oh.
Woodland Hills.
Oh, no. I hope it's not the church I think it is. I'll ask you off mic. Oh, shit. That's so depressing. It's so, so depressing to think of that. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness that's preventing you from achieving your goals? Like maybe every night at 2 a.m. on the dot, you're waking up in a kind of weird anxiety rage, completely unable to forgive certain people in your life while simultaneously feeling like a complete imposter? BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You'll be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional therapy done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas. The service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your therapist. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change therapists if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline therapy, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily. There are glowing testimonials there. Go check them out. Then please visit betterhelp.com/Duncan. That's better, H-E-L-P. And join the over 2 million people who've taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional therapists in all 50 states. Right now, my wonderful listeners will get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/Duncan. One of my teachers, Ram Dass, do you know, have you heard of Ram Dass? He's great. But one of the things he says is that any good church or religion or whatever is a self-destructing trap. It keeps you there long enough for you to be empowered, for you to, take on whatever it is that it's transmitting and then move on with your life, not stay perpetually in some kind of never-ending, trap. And some of these churches, because they need that money and because the people running them are getting incredibly wealthy and not paying taxes. How about that? What a fucking grift. They don't pay
everything
taxes.
Is money. No taxes, and everything becomes about money. It's like, please put some money in the bucket for the women's group. Please put some money in the bucket for the children's choir. Please. Mind you, you see the porcelain walls and you see these elaborate floors. And I'm like, what is that for? What do you need this for?
Yeah.
When you got people, I went to this church in Los Angeles and it was shaming people into giving money. Like they make you stand in a line and give the offering. And the pastor was like, everybody in here should be able to give $20. And I remember at that time in my life, I was so broke. I had my two kids and I was just like, I was like, that's my last $20. Like I need it for gas. Wow. But you get in this line and they watch you shaming people into giving you money. And I was like, I can't do this. I can't, because I mean, this is not wise. This is not wise, right? You have to be smart with your spending. So I stopped. I stopped going to these churches altogether. And I was like, I'm going to be my own church.
Yes.
Because I'm pure at heart. And I know that I mean well. And I really want to help people. And I want to give. And I give a lot, and I give quietly. I don't put on Instagram when I help somebody. Or I don't give with the expectation of return. And I may not have, like some of my friends who have a lot of money, but I always feel good when I give.
Oh my God. It's the greatest feeling. And I do think there is something to be said for doing it secretly. I don't know why or what it is, or there does feel like some true, like magical thing happens when no one knows except the person that you're with. And it's so, also, I think it's just humiliating, this thing where people film, someone's holding a camera and then you see them doing some nice thing. So it's all been set up and staged and it's pretty grotesque. But hey, I've got some questions about you.
Okay.
You end up in Los Angeles, homeless, living in a car with your kid. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm sorry, this is just a question from your Wikipedia. But it seems like it's saying that simultaneously you had started working on stand-up comedy.
It's
so
true.
Oh my God, can you tell me how you navigated the Los Angeles comedy scene while being a mom living in your car?
So in all fairness and in all transparency, I only slept in my car for maybe about a week. We were homeless, so we would get vouchers. And the vouchers were for like Best Westerns, which I'm thankful to Best Westerns because I stayed at a few of them, but I was able to have a warm place and a safe place for my kids to sleep. But I did sleep in that car for a week, and that was probably one of the most horrifying things I've ever done. Since then, I haven't slept. I cannot sleep more than 5 hours a night, but because I was in that situation, I didn't sleep because I was scared that something was going to happen. Somebody was going to see us. It was very, very horrible. I did start doing stand-up when I was homeless. I was not, that was at the point where I was staying at someone's house who's a friend of mine. And I had a safe place for my kids to be.
Great.
So I wasn't in a car going and stand up and having even my kids in the car. But I didn't do stand up at that time. I never thought it would turn into anything. It was mainly for, it was cathartic for me. It was just me processing and working out what was happening in my real life. And I couldn't afford therapy. So being able to get on stage and just talk about it and just make it funny somehow became the what I never thought I needed. But I didn't, I had a job, I had a full-time job. And, you know, I always want to make sure that I take the opportunity to say that, because a lot of times people think that those who are homeless because they're lazy and because they don't want to work and they've given up on everything. A lot of people who've ended up unhoused is because they're under earners in a country that, you know, prioritizes wealth over health. Mm. And people don't realize that a lot of those people are also veterans. When they come back, the resources that are available to them are limited and they can't cope. They need mental health, you know, care and all that. So when I speak on behalf of that period of my life, which was, you know, it was years. I wasn't unhoused for 8 months. I was without a home for about 4 years.
Wow.
That was very, very traumatic. And the people that you see when they're asking for money, or you see people, everybody's not on drugs. Everybody is not lazy and don't want to work. Everybody, you know, is not a violent criminal. Those are human beings that are having a very difficult time surviving in a country that is doused with toxic capitalism and really just overlooks the value of human beings and human life. And that doesn't mean that I'm communist or I'm anti-capitalism. I'm speaking to the specific toxic capitalism that has, you know, people in America so uneducated that any single reality star or celebrity politician can sway you because you don't have the basic information and knowledge from school, because they don't care about schools the way that they care about cars and they care about everything else. And so those people that you see, and I was one of them, it was so. Anyway, I started to, you know, use those experiences and talk about them on stage. And for a little while, I had like my own little therapy session with an audience.
Wow. I want to talk more about this, what you were saying about unhoused people. And are you in LA? Are you living in LA right now?
I live in Los Angeles, yeah.
Oh, so how... I think I know what you're going to say, but full disclosure, when I was living in Los Angeles and the spread of the tent cities and, you know, knowing everything that you're saying, new age spiritual teachers and, you know, praying to God and all this stuff, I still felt resentful. I still felt like, what the fuck is this? This city is so expensive. They're taxing us so much. And somehow we're like, you're witnessing a kind of poverty that I've never seen anywhere in all the places I've traveled in the world. I've never seen anything like that. And your mind wants to come up because you don't want to face what you just said. You don't want to face the reality. These are people, you know, not, you want to make them into monsters. You want to think, so for me, I would think, well, these are people who just want to do heroin on the streets, or,
right?
Because just trying to be brutally honest, it makes your drive easier. When you're driving somewhere, you don't have to confront the fact that you're witnessing people who have just been ground up in these invisible gears and splattered out all over the streets, who are hopeless beyond hopeless. But how are we to maintain compassion in the face of this sort of thing? I've got kids, you know, I don't want my kid to see somebody shooting up on the side of the street or like jerking off while I'm at a traffic light, you know? So how do you balance, you know, the compassion with like realism when it comes to it?
That's also, that's very transparent and that's very honest. And I cannot say that I can't relate, you know, because I understand exactly what you're talking about. Being in this city can be very harmful to the psyche and the spirit if you're not honest about it. Some people get swept into it and they justify it with whatever because the hype tells you, because you are having success, that you're doing it right. And, you know, even fools, you know, can do well in life. I have to stay grounded in some spiritual work so that I can maneuver being in this city every day. And I'm not going to lie to you and tell you that I don't think about leaving this place multiple times a week.
Yeah.
Because it is a toxic place to be. It is expensive. It is superficial, and it's hard to live in this place. And now that you see these people coming and robbing people and doing smash and grabs and all of this stuff, what you're seeing is an evolution of crime and criminals becoming more intelligent and learning that they were harming themselves by staying in their own communities that are already lacking. And now they're going to where the wealthy are.
Right.
And eventually, hopefully, they'll evolve to the place where they learn that that's not where you need to be. If you really want to make an impact, then you need to really go to where the money really is, because that's really who has their foot on your necks. But
where is that? What do you mean, like a castle in Bavaria or something? Like where?
No.
they got to find the Illuminati base.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not, the Illuminati is right in front of us, right? You want to be mad at another, and you know, as a person of color, you want to go steal a watch from another person of color who appears to have more than you. Mm-hmm. But Jeff Bezos became a trillionaire during a pandemic where half a million people died, right? So.
Right.
Your anger is targeted at the wrong place, and it's institutions. Like, I'm not telling anybody go kill Jeff Bezos, but what I'm saying is you're targeting the wrong people if that's really what you feel like you're doing, or else it's envy and jealousy. You're not really doing this because you're hungry. You're doing it because you're entitled. And so there's a lot to unpack there. But what I'm saying is that...
Hold on. We're going to cut to an Amazon commercial now.
Oh,
okay, we're back. I'm just kidding. That's hilarious. So sorry. I'm sorry. I'm honestly thinking, oh God, did Amazon advertise on this episode?
Oh, well.
No, I know. What? No, I'm not taking that out. Are you kidding? What you're saying is true. It's just, I think like it's just probably a hell of a lot easier to do a smash and grab than it is to get through the multiple layers of security around the people that you're talking about. I mean,
no, I agree. But what I'm saying is that it's misdirected anger. But what I was saying is that's how it's evolved, right? Because first you would hear people saying, oh, look at them. They're just destroying their own neighborhoods. They're stealing from their own people. Well, now they're not. Now they're in Beverly Hills, right? Yeah. Now they're in Calabasas. Yeah. So now it's, oh my goodness, they're gruesome people. And we don't ever sit down and talk about what the root of all of this is, right? And the root is that some people are eating like fat rats and some people are eating rats. And there's a big difference in that. And we don't, you know, what do you think is going to happen as human beings continue to evolve? You know, they start figuring things out and things start to move. And now you have to be uncomfortable. And that's really ugly for you because you're not used to that. You're used to people serving it to you on a platter.
Yeah.
And you don't have to see those people because they're not in your neighborhood. You're not in, you know what I'm saying? And so
that's one of the ways I was beating myself up, is I'm like, oh, really? Okay. So now it's in your fucking face and you're uncomfortable. You just want to see it in little like clips on Fox News with some kind of fucked up commentary about it. Like when they show the immigrants on Fox News, they're at war with immigrants. And these are, they will zoom in on a mom and like two kids.
Yep.
With like music playing as though like they're zooming in on some kind of predatory alien. You know what I mean? And they are so unaware. They don't even know that's what they're doing. It's like, where is the, you know, so I hear what you're saying. It's like, here it is. It's in your face. Now, now, do now live with that, now deal with it, because, you know, the very system that's putting those people out is the same system that's given you a car, that's given you the ability to drive around. But all that being said, still from a compassionate place, what's the solution? This is an ongoing conversation when I was living in LA that I was always having. I was, you know, always curious, like, how people thought the situation could be dealt with. What's, you know, and again, I'm not asking for you to give some kind of, obviously, if anyone knew, but I would love to hear your thoughts on ways to
solutions. To deal with it.
This episode has been sponsored by Storyworth. Friends, if you are looking for the ultimate gift to impress your in-laws or people you love or your parents, Storyworth is the way to go. It's an online service that helps you and your loved ones preserve precious memories and stories for years to come. It's a thoughtful and meaningful gift that connects you to those who matter most. Every week, Storyworth emails your relative or friend a thought-provoking question of your choice from their vast pool of possible options. Each unique prompt asks questions you've never thought to ask, like, what's the bravest thing you've ever done in your life? Or if you could see into the future, what would you want to find out? To some of you, this might seem, I don't know, a little cheesy, but I promise you, you will be so glad that you did this. I just went to where I was born, St. Simons, Georgia, and had a wonderful dinner with one of my cousins. And, you know, when you get older, not to be completely dark, sorry, Storyworth, your relatives start dropping like flies, and you can't ask them the questions that you want to ask them. Storyworth helps you with that. It compiles all of these things that you will be so happy you have at some point in your life. After 1 year, Storyworth will compile all your loved ones' stories, including photos, into a beautiful keepsake book that you'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come. This is the kind of thing that I'm going to be able to show my kids. And even more importantly, it gives people like your parents or your grandparents a sense that you're interested in them. And that means a lot. Reading the weekly stories helps connect you with loved ones, no matter how near or far apart you are. With Storyworth, I'm giving those I love most a thoughtful, personal gift from the heart in preserving their memories and stories for years to come. Go to Storyworth.com/Duncan and save $10 on your first purchase. That's Storyworth.com/Duncan to save $10 on your first purchase. Thank you, Storyworth.
Yeah. How do we get go? So I honestly believe a lot of our FDR said that one of the greatest threats to democracy was, a lack of education. And he said it far more eloquently than I did. But I believe in that. I believe that wholeheartedly. I think that everything begins with education, right? Education, because of course, resources, right? Because a book is not going to feed a family. But I think the fact that we're so uneducated and we're so far from balance because we're getting our information from the internet and we constantly distracted and always thinking about ourselves, yes. Right? Because now you have your own little channel on social media where you can post pictures of yourself, get adoration, and your brain just starts deteriorating. It becomes like mush. Yes. And you don't realize that you're not aware of what's happening and everything in your world is to support your ideologies because the machine has picked up on what it is that you like and what you believe. And so you're insulated in this world. And so I think education is a big factor in how we you know, restore order, because so many people, you know, now these teachers are going into the classroom after listening to Fox News or CNN for the whole weekend, and they take that with them.
Right.
You know, they absolutely take it with them. And we've got, it's idiocracy, right? So what's the opposite of that is information and education. And it has to be equal education, that everybody is being educated with the right information, until people start being informed, because we're emotional creatures, we can't move forward. Because now you have half of this country believing that red is it, the Matrix, damn it, is come to life. Blue is it. And the truth is that it's all for profit, and all of us are pawns in the game.
Wow.
Your allegiance to is no difference in the Red Sox and the Yankees. You are have this blind allegiance to this team, and that team is just trying to win a World Series. It can care less about you. But you know, it has to be education. People have such bad education. Some places in the middle of the country, in the South, even in California, don't have up-to-date books. They're getting informed by stuff that happened, you know, books that were written 10 years ago.
Right.
It's really, really bad the way that our children are being educated. And these are the people that grew up. These are the people that grew up on the internet now. And they feel like, you know, I deserve this. I should have this. There's an entitlement that doesn't come with work ethic. Everything on the internet glorifies how quickly you can get there. There's never anything about educating people about the process, about how you work to get the things that you have. And it's just become a circus. And that's what we are. And until we start delivering accurate information to people, they're going to be ill-informed and they're going to react. That's what we have, a reactionary world. All we do is people reacting, you know?
Yeah. It's a danger. It's a very scary, weird place that you add to it the bizarre reality of a lot of artificial intelligence bots intentionally starting arguments and threads to signal jam debate. And it's so surreal. I want to ask you related to this. Your story is just so incredible. And to go from living in your car, even for a week, it's the fact that you're like, oh, it was just a week. It was just a week in a car with my kid. It was just a week not knowing what was coming.
Terrible.
Or what. I wouldn't wish that on anyone. But to go from that to having an amazing special on HBO is so beautiful and so powerful. But how are you dealing with that kind of acceleration in your career? How are you dealing with this sudden real power that you have, this sudden real fame that you have, this which is only going to grow and grow and grow and grow? How do you deal with it? You know, everything that you're saying about education and people understanding our privilege and, you know, understanding why it's, you are now going to go to the place where you meet the people who earlier you were recommending. Those are the ones who should be robbed. I know you didn't really mean that, but you know what I'm saying? Like, don't you find it a little eerie and unnerving and creepy sometimes? Because I know by now some of them have probably come knocking at your door to say hello.
Absolutely. So one of the challenges that I always have in this business is the battle with my conscience, right? Like, I don't ever want to become one of those people that I despise, and I got to be honest, because I feel like I see a lot of people who are famous. I know them. I'm friends with some of them. I wouldn't say friends, but I know them, who are very performative, and they claim to love the people. But when the cameras are off, it's all an angle now, right? Because even activism has become mainstream. So everybody's an activist. Everybody has a cause. You know, how do I get involved with this? Because it's good press. You know, I have made a commitment that I'm going to be part of that minority group of people who want to make a difference. And the only way to change some of this stuff is from inside, right? Because if you're not inside, you're not impacting, you know. I don't consider myself being inside yet, even though I may have a special on HBO Max. I think that I can be problematic to some of those people because, you know, I threaten that for them and they keep doors closed when it comes to me. But I really want to be a part of the solution. And so for me, it's just about gaining equity and power, like you said, and learning to speak the business speak to be able to gain enough money and power to create content for the good people. And that's really what I work towards. It's like, I don't want to tell any more lies. I don't want to perpetuate what's already out there. I really want to be a part of the solution and also give people something positive to look forward to, because the trauma porn is at an all-time high right now.
Oh my God.
And it's people are triggered and they're depressed and they've experienced this collective trauma of what's happening in the country with this pandemic. And I just think that they're never at the top of the list of priority of what entertainment should be. It always is about numbers and money and right. not giving people, you know, because if you put some trauma porn, people are going to watch. So that's going to give numbers and money, but never like with the wellness of the people at the heart of it all. And I want to stay.
Can you define trauma porn for me?
You know, like, I think that a lot of these movies, TV shows, you ever see those videos where people getting beat up or people getting killed? They go viral.
Yeah, okay.
People just get off on that stuff. Like, and it's, you don't realize that constantly feeding that to your subconscious mind, downloading that, your subconscious mind doesn't know the difference between reality and fantasy. And then you wonder, why are you feeling down?
Oh, you're talking about Dateline. Forensic Files. Is that what you're talking about?
I'm talking about all of it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Even movies, like, people love SVU. Like, I'm one of them. I watch so many episodes of SVU, and then I wonder while I'm walking around paranoid. I'm in the parking lot. Right. Like, with my key ready to, and you know, and you have to, you just walk around like, because you're constantly downloading. I remember watching Sons of Anarchy. I binged and then I went into a depression when it was over.
Wow.
And my therapist was like, yeah, because your subconscious mind doesn't know the difference. So of course you're sad because your mind feels like you had so much loss. You experienced so much loss. That's why you shouldn't binge. You should watch and release, watch and release, because your subconscious mind doesn't know the difference.
Right.
But it's just like, that's, so I stay because I want to make a difference. And I believe that there are people here who you don't hear about all the time that really want to do good work and create content that's good for the people.
Speaking of which, sorry, may I toot your horn for a moment? Can I play a clip of you back to you just to hear your thoughts on it now? Do you mind? I'm sorry. This is the shit. This is where the rubber hits the road. This is, folks, this is somebody who is not bullshitting. You're really like, in fact, you're being kind of modest about it. But I found this clip. It's from a few years ago. Do you mind if I played it? You're on a panel with the Young Turks. They've got you up there with two like right-wing people. And I just wanted to play what you said, because a little clip from what you said. Here it is. And then we could talk about it, because we have about 10 more minutes here.
So what, let me ask you.
Can we save the world?
No, we cannot save the world.
Because if there's people coming
in from
Guatemala and Honduras, can we take more children from Africa and China?
No, we should start with the little white boys who shoot up schools and theaters in America is where we should start. We like to give immigration a brown face. Are you talking about the Eastern Europeans that come here? Because you're talking about building a wall. Is that going to keep people coming from China? It's always our people who are demonized. And you talk about, we come here and we commit crimes, and the Democrats want the MS-13 to come here and rape all the white women. We hear that bullshit all the time. Where? We gotta be scared right now. Look how many white boys are out here. We gotta worry about them shooting this bitch up. And it's really frustrating to have to hear that immigration comes from Mexico, El Salvador, when we all know that people migrate here from all over the world, overstay their welcome, abuse our economy, break the laws, and then you want to blame it on the people who come here who are honorable. They work, they mow lawns, they do all kinds of things that you would never do.
Sell delicious fruit.
Beautiful. Okay. What did that feel like? What did that feel like when you were doing that from your heart? And I, what did
you can
like?
Hear it, right? I was angry. You know, the thing is that I don't want to participate in this thing, this us versus them thing in America, because we all know it's common knowledge that all of us are the children of immigrants. This land is sacred land that belongs to the First Nations people. And many of us are the descendants of immigrants that came to this country, all seeking the same thing. Whether they came from Ireland or Guatemala,
right,
they were seeking some sort of freedom. And so, you know, to sit here and just talk about the, it's just, you know, those people that I'm different because I don't belong to any group on that panel, right? I don't belong to any group. I'm there with the Young Turks, but I'm there as a stand-up comedian. And I sit there and I'm like, you are speaking these talking points because they support the doctrine that you guys continuously spit out because you're getting checks from corporations and you are participating in political party bullshit, yeah, and it has nothing to do with the people. Because right, when was the last time said white guy sitting on a panel that you ever drove through Omaha, Idaho, Montana, and talked to those white people who are also struggling because of this toxic economy,
right,
and don't know any better? When was the last time you shook hands with one of those people? So you sitting here scaring them, telling them these immigrants are trying to take their jobs. But when you go to California and you look at when they deported the farmers because the farmers that were for Trump participated in getting rid of those people that were working there, then they were begging because they didn't have anybody to come mine the crops because all of these alleged jobs that these immigrants were taking, nobody wanted to do them.
Right.
So then when we sit there and have this conversation, I'm like, and what immigrants are you talking about? Eastern Europeans come here every day illegally. And you know what? They also do jobs that nobody would want to do. And you also scoff at them. So I was just sitting there and I'm listening and I'm like, what are we talking about here, guys? Like, really? Did you come here to say you made immigrants the boogeyman? And you thought I was going to sit there and allow you to do that. And that's not going to happen on my watch because too many people in this country are struggling, are hungry, are really, really, and they don't even know any better. And because they don't have a good education, Fox News, CNN, all of these people are telling them bullshit and they're believing it because what happens when you're afraid? You become angry and then you become hateful. That's the process, right? And so I'm sitting here listening to this man feeding all of these people with this information. And those people got caught the bus and paid to watch this man talk. And I was like, nah, bro, you're not doing that here.
Wow.
I was
so angry. Yeah, that's it. I mean, I think that like that to me was an act. You know, I know what you're saying. I feel like I'm guilty of it because it's so easy to tweet some obvious fucking thing. In the past, I've done that, whatever. We've all transgressed in that way. But I think that what you did, that's what real activism looks like, which is you go to the place where it's at, confront it directly in front of people, and then somehow you manage to be funny and in the midst of that. That is real talent, because I could hear it in your voice. I could hear the pain. I could hear like that stammer for a second just said everything about how upset, how pissed off you were at them, and the look on their face was so beautiful. The they weren't used to that.
Yeah, they came there to humble me. They were sent there to put me in my place because I'm not a political pundit. And I didn't finish college. So they were coming there to put me in my place because this is what they do for a living. The problem was that they came there with their talking points and they came there with, you know, this disingenuous vibe. And I don't talk about things that I don't know about because I didn't go to Harvard and I don't have a degree, but I do know people and I know good people and I know good working people. And I'm tired of these political fools continuously swaying people in different directions while the people are struggling. And I'm sitting there watching them roll up in their nice you know, expensive attire while I have on a dress that I bought at Target, and I'm sitting there listening.
That was a beautiful dress.
Thank you. But, you know, and I appreciate that. But what I'm saying is, no, I bought it at Marshall's. I'm sitting there like I'm sitting here knowing what it's like because I got to go to work every day still as a stand-up comedian. Yeah. And you're sitting here because Fox News is giving you all this money. And you're going to tell me about us? Like the us as the working class people? Are you kidding? Get out of here with that bullshit, bro. Right. Get out of here.
Right. Wow. Yeah. I was really impressed that you spent part of your comedy special going back to see your dad. Mm-hmm. And
forgiveness.
Oh, wow. And, you know, we didn't mention it yet, but and maybe you could help clarify this the story. You were abducted. Your mom came and took you from your dad. When you were just a little baby. And just to clarify, you hadn't seen him since that event.
No, I'd seen him like on WhatsApp a few times after we reconnected. But that's the first time I actually touched my father since I was maybe 3 or 4 years old.
Wow. Wow. That must have been the most beautiful, bittersweet feeling to come there shooting your special. Could you just talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, I wanted to capture that. I wanted to normalize, you know, that the romantic notion that of a not having a parent in your life and reconnecting with your parent is going to become something that's like a fairy tale. I wanted people to see it, especially little kids who don't have a parent, and or younger people. I would say, when I say little kids, I'm always talking about people who could be 19, but younger people who are feeling that void of not having a parent. I wanted them to see what it looked like and what it felt like. I didn't have my father. I had my mother's last name. I grew up feeling this hole in my life, and I wanted them to see that I did accomplish something in life, and that there you can be on the other side of that. And I also wanted to show people where my jokes come from and how I write my jokes. So I wanted to share an experience that would end up in the special and the comedy.
Great joke, P.S. Great joke about like, how does it? Oh yeah. Do you mind if I poorly recite your joke back to you? It was so good about what your dad was a giver. Everybody got their own. Will you do the joke for me? I'm sorry.
He gave everybody their own mother.
Oh my God. Such a killer joke. And then to have it illustrated, like, wow.
You saw all those sisters and they have different mothers. And I'm sitting there like, I'm surrounded by people that I never knew existed. And there's so many different trails of pain from different women that were, you know, hurt. And now the daughters who are also women that are hurt. And it was just, I wanted to show it. And I was like, I don't care if people, you know, I want people to know that that is okay. And this is life for some of us. And a lot of people have reached out to me, white, black, Latino, have said to me, men, women, you know, trans have said, I had the same experience. I didn't meet my father till I was 9. Or thank you for sharing that experience. I thought I was alone. My driver, a white man that was in his 30s, who took me to the airport, was like, I watched your special, the stuff about your dad. I just want you to know that I went and saw my father. He was like, I didn't meet him, but I saw him. And it was because I saw your special. So it was cool.
Wow. Well, you know what? Your dad missed out. And that's the real truth. He missed out and he'll never get that back. And that's a tremendous loss that I think a lot of these dads, they don't realize until it's way too late what they let go of. And
thank you for that. I appreciate that, because that was what I was grappling with my whole life was, am I nothing because he's not here? And so that's where that forgiveness came from. It was forgiving him because of that missing part. Because your parents are where your trust is formed. Yeah. And so that you form your empathy, your self-esteem, and your trust with your parents. So for me, it was like, oh, I'm not worth anything. And then I evolved to this place where I was like, you missed out. I turned out pretty good in spite of your absence. And so thank you for saying that.
Yeah. Oh God. Thank you for making such beautiful comedy for us and for doing this amazing work. And thanks for giving me all of your time today.
Thank you for having me here. I love doing it. And this has been like one of the most thoughtful podcasts that I've been on. So thank you for these questions and watching and, you know, knowing what I do. And, you know, I care about people and I don't ever want to lose that. And I'm never going to let this town make me like that.
Accountable. I'll see. We're coming back. I'm bringing the family back. We left for the pandemic. We're headed back in the summer. So don't leave. Maybe we can get dinner or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Come to a show. We can get dinner. I would love to meet your family. And this is what it's about for me. It's building a community of people like us.
Yeah.
Because we make the difference. This right here makes the difference. Getting this out. That's how we change the world.
I love it. Everybody, Fighting Words, you can find it on HBO. It's brilliant, obviously.
It's HBO Max.
I guess there's a distinction now. I'm old. It's all
HBO. HBO Max is the streamer, and I think that some people have it and don't have HBO proper. So
HBO Max, not regular boring HBO. HBO Max. And can you let people know how they can find you, please, Ida?
Sure. Funny AIDA on Instagram and Twitter, and on Facebook, which I really go to, is Ida.Rodriguez.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Ida.
Thank you. Have a beautiful day. God bless you.
God bless you. That was Ida Rodriguez, everybody. She's going to be at the Laugh Factory in Los Angeles. If you happen to be listening to this on the weekend of December 10th, definitely catch her live and check out her special, Fighting Words, on HBO Max.